from the 15th chapter of John, verses 12 through 17. And these words tell us, "This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. There is no greater love than this, that a man lay down his life for the sake of his friends. You are my friends if you do everything that I command you. Henceforth, I will not call you servants, because a servant does not know what his master does. But I have always called you my friends, because everything that I heard from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you, and I have appointed you that you also should go and produce fruit, and that your fruit might remain, so that whatever you ask my Father in my name, he will give it to you. I command these things to you, so that you may love one another." Now may these beautiful words find a place in our hearts, and may we better understand them before this hour has ended.
Before we look at the front of our bulletin and have the thought that begins our state of consciousness here this morning, I have an announcement that is a good news and bad news. And I suppose the bad news of it is that we're going to lose Gary Wilson as our business administrator here in this congregation. But wait a minute, the good news is he's going to continue to be with us every Sunday morning and be head of our music department. In the many years that Gary and I have been associated, he came here when he was 16 years old to be our soloist, and 3 years ago when he graduated from San Diego State College as a music major and as a trained teacher, he came to work for us because this was an opportunity that opened up and there weren't too many teaching positions. But now Gary has been accepted for a wonderful position as being head of the music departments of the Encinitas School District. And so it seems to further his career. It's just wonderful for him to be able to take advantage of this. And it's wonderful for us to have had him 3 years. Let's give him a hand of applause. That's enough. We want him to come back and be with us on Sunday. Mr. Fred Pena, who has worked for been an employee of the church for over a year, has taken Gary's place as business administrator, and Fred is going to, I'm sure, do as excellent a job as Gary has in the many splendored and many faceted parts of this ministry. Some don't realize we have 22 people working in the prayer ministry, paid employees, and I believe we have 9 or 10 full-time employees working in the rest of the church. The ministry of this congregation goes far beyond just the boundaries of San Diego. Our ministry goes all over Southern California, and because of the prayer ministry now, continually seems to be spreading out in further and further directions. And so it's our budget here is grown. I remember when it used to be $6 or $7 a day. That's when I was here by myself. But our budget here now is running somewhere between, over $25,000 a month. And those are our fixed expenses. And when we want to buy extra paper clips or something that isn't in the budget, it costs us more. So it's a wonderful thing we have. And we help thousands and thousands of people find a new concept of themselves and a new and vital and practical Christianity that they can use in their lives. So we're doing a good work. And by what it looks as now, it will continue to expand and grow, and we can spread this message and its concept into more and more minds and hearts. One thing that I want to remind you of, I think we have probably one of the quietest sanctuaries before our service begins I've ever known of. But once in a while, I like to remind us that when we come in here, we should be absolutely quiet so that we can have the most silent and quiet sanctuary there has ever been. So I would remind you that when you come into the sanctuary, keep it as quiet and as peaceful, and you'll find that there will be something within you that will respond to not only your quietness, but the quietness around you. Now let's look at our program of this morning. The first page we have on there a meditation. It says, "I pray for guidance and I receive guidance." Now, this is the way we begin to start our awareness and consciousness growing into this hour, not only individually but collectively. I pray for guidance and I receive guidance. This is the kind of thing that allows us to open our minds to and our hearts and our awareness to receive guidance that doesn't have to come through the intellect. You know, the homing pigeon, when it's up there and it's let out of the little box and it's hundreds of miles from home, it doesn't intellectually say, well, now I'll find a Shell gas station. They have the best maps. And it doesn't have to look on the map. It knows. It knows the way back. The salmon knows the way back. The butterfly knows when it's time to fly. The monarch, if you've read this month's issue of National Geographic magazine, there is something in that butterfly, and it's individual and collective, that tells the monarch butterfly when it's time to fly from Canada to Mexico. And that fragile thing makes it. There is a knowledge in the universe. There is an intelligence. And this intelligence does not necessarily have to go through the intellect for you to know what you need to know. The intellect's a tremendous thing, but we have other faculties within us that can lead us and guide us and can help us evaluate. So I want you to say, I pray for guidance and I receive guidance. Together? I pray for guidance and I receive guidance. Let's say it again. I pray for guidance, and I receive guidance. Believe that when you say it. Feel that you believe it when you say it. Let's say it again now. I pray for guidance, and I receive guidance. And once again, I pray for guidance, and I receive guidance. Now let's say it very softly and say it to our inner selves together. I pray for guidance. And I receive guidance. Now, even softer together, I pray for guidance and I receive guidance. Now, if you will, close your eyes and put yourself in an attitude of prayer. Let me say the words. But you can respond to my words and they can be your prayer. Together we pray, O Lord Christ indwelling. In this hour we've come to acknowledge thy presence, to hear thy teachings, to expand the boundaries of our belief and our assurance that we are a part of life and that we each are real. Let us find in this hour the knowledge that comes not only from outer sources but from the inner wells of reality, that we can take away all of the dark spots and the hard places of our minds and hearts, that we might find a new perception, that we might find the things that not divide us but make us one with all of life. Let us find new meanings for the word and the experience called friendship. Let us find in the depth of our being new ideas and concepts of what we truly are. Bless every member of this congregation. Bless our friends and our guests who have come to worship and study and learn. This morning we give thanks for more love in this world. And we pray, O Lord, let there be more love. And let it begin with me right now. Amen. That's always, oftentimes more than others, it's a pretty hard act to follow, this group. I think they look beautiful this morning. Can we have the lights turned on them, please? They have new choir robes. Let's give them a hand. You can turn the lights off now. The choir robes were purchased half by the church and half by one of the members of the choir. And they looked beautiful. I think they even sounded better this morning. And I'm very, very grateful for them. Today we're going to think about friendship. But you really can't think about friendship until you begin to realize how wonderful it is to be alive, to be an identity, to be aware of yourself, to be able to make choices. Now, it's true that some people can make more choices than others. We say that we're all free. We're not. It's all in our minds. Some people have more alternatives than others. Some people say, oh, I couldn't be nice to you because I don't like you. Well, that's their problem, because they are bound. Many people are more free than others. Some of us are free to love everyone. Some of us are free to love only those that are like us. Some of us are free to love those people that we feel superior to. Sometimes we are only free to love those people we feel that are inferior. But all of us have many, many conditions on how we live and what we think about. And it is in this living and this being that we are free. Some of us are free to tell the truth, and some of us say, no, I can't tell you the truth. I'll tell you something else. But each of us know in our quiet moments of reality where we are. And that's why one of the main teachings of metaphysical Christianity is to take a time every day, more than once a day, to sit down and say, all right now, where am I? What am I? What am I doing? And make contact and find the essence of your reality. Not what you own, not your self-image, not what other people think of you, not what you've done, but what you are at the depth of your being. Friendship, of course, is difficult to define because it's a many-splendored thing. It's like love. We say, I love you. So oftentimes we've accepted that whatever we desire is what we love. Whatever feels good, we say, that's love. But that isn't the case. We say, I love vanilla ice cream. Tastes good. We say, I love you. We may say, I love you, but what we really mean is, I may need you. So we have to examine ourselves, not to the point that we're prostrated and we think, oh, I can't go on, but we can find answers. It's not that difficult to find answers. You'll find them if you want them. Now let's think about friendship. Oh, I can remember, as you can, friendship. It's so easy to look it up in the dictionary and define friendship. It's another thing to feel it. I think sometimes we have to live a while before we really know what friendship is. I think of an experience 35, 40 years ago when I was in the very early stages of elementary school. In the area I lived in Los Angeles, we had a small elementary school, and one afternoon a week a teacher would be sent from somewhere, and she was our music teacher. And oh, what a wonderful time we had with her. She had little bells and clangs and stamps and little pieces of wood you knock together. And she told us how wonderful we were. I love that woman. Wonderful woman. I don't quite remember what she looks like. She was a young woman, and she was always happy and smiling, and she was always carrying boxes and bags of all this stuff she'd bring in every week. And when we were especially good, when we really orchestrated fantastically, she gave us each a little penny piece of candy. And that was a highlight. That was a tremendous accomplishment. We all went away congratulating ourselves on our music ability and our talents. But that really isn't what I remember. What I really remember is one day, and this was before the Second World War, one day, as I was going out of the school, she was there. And when she saw me, she said, oh, come here, come here. And she said some greeting to me, and she was very kind, and evidently she had lots of candy because she gave me one of these penny things. That was maybe close to 40 years ago. But you know, I remember it was an act of friendship. It was something. And I've often thought about that. There's another time, this was probably not quite so long ago, when I was a boy, we always went down to a certain little shoe store, as all the children, especially the boys, did that I knew, to buy their shoes. At this one place, and there was an elderly gentleman in there, and he was full of fun. He was lots of fun, and he always had something for you. A balloon or some little thing, and he bought these himself. Wasn't the owner of the store that gave them out, but he gave them out. So you went to him. Stood in line. Well, as I grew up, and I'd known him for many years, I got a job in a local drugstore right near this shoe store. And every day, or at least every Saturday, when I was there all day, this man would come in on his noon hour, and he'd put his penny down on the counter, and he'd say, "All right, Bob, how much can I buy today with that?" And he always just wanted some candy or something. For those of you that are under 30, there used to be penny candies. And he'd always say that. Well, it was a lot of fun, and I'd respond. But one time, when I went to buy some shoes, I found he was ill, and I didn't see him for a long time. But then one Saturday morning he came in, and he was leaning on his wife's arm, and he had on his pajama tops and a pair of pants and his slippers, and he looked just terrible. But he came in and he said, put his penny down, and he said, "All right, young man, how much can I get today?" And we had a few words, and his wife smiled. That's the last time I ever saw him. Friendship is a great thing. Sometimes it's a fleeting thing. Sometimes an act of friendship is in a place where you don't know anyone's name. It's in a place of very impersonal transaction, business, whatever. But friendship is that ability to share yourself. But you never can really share yourself until you believe that whomever you're sharing yourself to is real. And I suppose it takes those two things to make the ingredient of friendship. There are many kinds of friendship, as you well know. There are two kinds. Well, there's really three I want to explain this morning. But the first kind of friendship is, according to the view of friendship, it's so important, friendship, that you really are not a complete person until you have a friend. It's as if you're half a person, and when you have a friend, they add the other half. That's like Romeo and Juliet. It's what we often find in the first heat of love. When we say, "I can't live without you. You're part of me." That's a kind of friendship. And we sometimes don't want to understand it, especially if we've been through it and we've grown into a more mature view. But it's a wonderful kind of friendship, and I think everyone has to go through it. That's the first kind. If we were to put it in some sort of mathematical equation, we would explain it as one half person plus one half person equals one whole person. You know what I'm talking about. Now, there's another kind of friendship. It's maybe we could call it viewpoint number two. This kind of friendship seems to be the sum of individuals involved. It is not meant, this kind of friendship, to melt people together and make them one, but to develop their unique differences. Mathematically speaking, viewpoint number two, we could say one person equals one person, equals one person and one person. In other words, it's the kind of friendship that you have where you don't lose your individuality. In a sense, you could say to your friend in this kind of friendship, because I'm with you, you make me a better person. When I'm with you, I can't lie. When I'm with you, I can't hate. You bring the best out of me. You make me into a real person, a person I'm glad to be. I need your friendship because of what you bring out of me. That's a very valid kind of friendship. And it's a worthwhile kind of friendship. Now, there's another kind of friendship that I'm becoming aware of. I'm so aware of it, and I've said so much about it, that I wrote an article in our church magazine for August on friendship. You'll get that next week. But this third kind of viewpoint of friendship is called third-person friendship. Well, if it isn't called third-person friendship, maybe we could say it's a third self. And this theory suggests a friendship that has a life of its own. In other words, when two people come together, they create a third. They create something else. We might say when two people get together and evolve a friendship, they create a meta self. Meta is a Greek word, a prefix meaning beyond or transcending or higher. It means when we come together, two people, we create a third state of consciousness. When two states of consciousness come together, they don't necessarily merge, but they create another state of consciousness. And this to me is tremendous. This is when you created something other than what you had. And it's a part of you, but it's a part of both of you. It took two of you to do this. This can be created in marriage. It can be created with the grocery clerk. It can be created with your neighbor. It can be created with your children or parents. But it's something that it takes both of you to create, and yet it doesn't take away from the individuality. But it's a third force. And if I were you, I would think about this. To me, this is the highest type of friendship. Not the melting together, not the standing there as two individuals separate. This is fine. But the third kind of friendship might be mathematically put as one person plus one person equals a third force, a third state of awareness. And that third force is what we call friendship. We can have it in big groups as we have it here. Or we can have it one-to-one. A word that needs to be reminded, we need to be reminded of, is the word empathy when we think about friendship. Empathy means to be able to put yourself in the other fellow's shoes. It means to be able to say, well, if I were that other person, how would I feel? Most of us have heard our voices on a tape recording machine. And it didn't sound like us. We had to get used to it. But even worse than hearing your own voice is hearing yourself talk to someone. And when you listen to what you said, maybe a day or so later, when you listen to what you said and you disassociate with how you felt at the time you said it, sometimes it doesn't sound very good. Most of us don't say what we're thinking. Most of us say what we feel. And of course, if we're feeling too strongly, what we say makes no sense at all, because we can only really say what we're thinking. And that's why we sometimes don't develop the friendships and we don't develop the communication, because we're always trying to say what we feel rather than to say what we think. That's why I believe it's great for us to have our times during the day to sit down and to harmonize our feelings and our thinking, to find ourselves together rather than thinking one thing and feeling another. I was in a restaurant not long ago, and I've been there before. I know the waitress fairly well as a friend. And she came to me the last time I was in, and she said, "Oh, Reverend Stephen," she says, "it's just terrible things going on around here." And then she told me the problem between the cook and his wife. Then she told me the problem between one of the suppliers of meat, why they can't get good meat, and how his young son has run away with somebody. And then she told me a few other things. The dishwasher wasn't working right. They had to wash it by hand. She had to help. All of these things she told me. And I thought, when she gave me the check at the end, I really should charge you. I didn't come here for that. I didn't come here to hear all of these problems. I didn't come here to hear about the steak. I came here to get some, you know. And sometimes empathy is a tremendous word, because I'm sure I know this woman. We've talked about it, so it's all right now. I'm sure if she'd have put herself in my place, she wouldn't have said a word about that. But she would have said other things. We live in a world sometimes that seems so impersonal. I just love ice cream. I could eat ice cream before I could eat anything else. But you know, when I go in, the last time I was in to 31 Flavors, they said, 41! I said, that's me. But we live in that kind of a society and we must accept it. But at the same time, when they say 41, just don't say, that's me. When they say 41, find the person that said that and realize that they're real. That you are real. And then when you speak to them as a real person and tell them what you really want and put a little of that desire, you know, say, give me one of those ice creams. And you'll find out that this begins to open you up. And you're a human being. You're not 41. And it isn't 78 cents you're old and so much back and you go out the door as the next number comes in. We have to begin to feel that we are real. When you wake up in the morning, say, I'm real. Because if you're not real, then God isn't real. And none of the rules that you live by are real. And when they're not real, then what you're doing isn't worthwhile. And everything loses its meaning. And so when you say that life isn't real, life isn't worthwhile, you're not talking about life, you're not talking about God, you're talking about yourself. So you have to be real, and the best way to feel real is to begin to treat other people as if they are. Seems like there's a story about a politician who was just starting out in life, and he rented his first great huge hall, and he prepared a tremendous speech, and he put advertisements in all the papers. And when he went down that night, as he stepped out on the platform, there was one person sitting right in the middle of this huge auditorium. And this fellow had on a great big cowboy hat. And so the politician said, look, I'm just starting out as a young politician. And he said, I really don't know what I should do in a case like this. He said, do you think that I should go ahead? And the cowboy sitting there said, well, he said, I'm just a cowhand. All I know is what I know about cows. But he said, of course, I do know if I took a load of hay down to the pasture and there was only one cow, I'd feed it. So the politician began to talk, and an hour and a half later, after saying everything he knew, he stopped. And he said, well, how'd they do? And the cowboy said, well, sir, he said, as I told you, I'm just a cowhand. But he said, you know, if I were to take a load of hay down to the meadow or pasture, and he said there was just one cow, he said, I'll be darned if I try to shovel that whole load down that one cow. That's what we call overkill. You know, when I was in Los Angeles, I served in a church that was quite metropolitan, and we had many people who worked in very sophisticated areas. One of them was a weatherman who told the weather. He was the one who figured it out. And when I first was employed by the church to be an assistant, I met this man and I was intrigued because I was told that he was the man, the top weatherman of the Southern California area, and that he knew what was going to happen. And so the first thing I said to him after I'd met him, I said, what's the weather going to be? It took him 35 minutes to tell me, and I only understood the first two or three lines that he said, because he said the sun is going to shine, and then he told me why. It was overkill. Have you ever asked someone, how are you? And they begin by saying, well, 73 years ago, I was born in a little town in Ireland, and you think, I'm in trouble. That doesn't help friendship. We have to be able to communicate with people, and I often find that you have to be able to tell them what they ask you. That's very important. They don't want to know anything else until you answer that. And then you should stop and see if they want to know. Sometimes we overkill. Now, of course, we know that we have to look at individuals as we hope they look at us, and realize that you're not going to like everything about somebody. You have to look at someone and know the things you don't like about them, and then realize the things you do like about them. For instance, we might hear someone say, "Oh, I sure like Joe until I got to know him better." Now, what do we mean by that? We mean I liked him until I found I learned all about him. Well, it's like the young girl who falls madly in love with some fellow, and she says, he's perfect. And after they're married and live for a while together, she gets terribly upset with him and begins to hate him with a passion because he deceived her. And that's simply because she insisted on him being perfect. And my dear friends, none of us are perfect. We have to learn to recognize that in the person that we don't like and that in the person that we do like. And then in our friendship, in this third state of consciousness, we begin to emphasize, we begin to love, we begin to enjoy the best within them, rather than emphasize or talk about the worst within them. This is part of our philosophy, to look for the good. The people that you really love are the people that always look for the good in you, even though they may know you very, very well. They look for the good. The people that are always looking for the bad in you, the people that are always looking for the little cracks and the crevices in you, these are the people you don't like. And these are the people that make you very nervous, and these are the people you are most likely to bring out the worst that's in you when you're around them, even if you're not thinking about it. There is no doubt that we have to like ourselves, and we can only be the friend to others to the degree that we are friendly with ourselves. We can only see in others what we are. If there is something in yourself that you don't like, you will dislike that same quality in other people. And you will dislike it a great deal more than you dislike it within yourself. The crook always thinks everyone else is a crook. The person who gossips thinks everyone else is gossiping about them. It's so easy to project your inadequacies on other people and then be very unfriendly. And maybe they had very little to do about it. The only thing they had to do about it is they happened to be like you. And you say, "I don't like them." There is a game in friendship that you'll never be able to win. I know the first minister I served under as an assistant, a tremendous man who'd been in the ministry at that time over 60 years, Dr. Ray Jarman of the First Christian Church in Los Angeles. And he said to me after about the third day I was with him, he took me up to his office and set me down, and he said, "I want to tell you something, and I don't want you to ever forget it, and that is that you cannot please everyone all the time." And those were very wise words, because in life, if you will learn to please yourself according to your highest standard of behavior, you'll find that you'll have plenty of friends. One time a few years ago, when I was on the pre-conference committee of the Association of Unity Churches, and we were going to have our conference at the Muehlbach Hotel in downtown Kansas City, I was there a few days early, and there was another great convention going on. And I was sitting in the dining room on the ground level of the Muehlbach Hotel, and as I was eating breakfast, I could see that there was one man who really wanted to be popular. And popularity seeking is a lost cause, as far as I'm concerned, in the building of friendship. And this man was going around to all the tables, and as he came up to me, I realized he was giving everyone a little badge that said, "Vote for Joe!" Or somebody. And he was patting them on the back, and I thought, well, he really wants to be elected. And he was all smiles and all friendly, and he came to me and he said, "How are you this morning?" I said, "Well, I'm fine." He put his arm around me and he said, "Now listen here," he said, "I really need your vote, and I want you to vote for me." And he said, "Here's a little pin to remind your old friend." He said, "Gosh, you're looking good today." And I said, "Thank you." I'd never seen him before. He didn't know me. I never voted for him, fortunately. This is being popular. When you see it like that, it looks repulsive. But you'll find out that popularity has nothing to do with friendship, in my opinion. Well, there are many, many things we could think about friendship. I suppose if there were three things that I, little capsules that I would give you to take, the first is, we must always act as we really are. If you don't like something, tell your friend. If you don't like it, say, I don't like it. And you can say it in a way that isn't going to hurt anyone's feelings. You must be yourself. The second thing, how we act must please us personally. You must be true to yourself. Sometimes what we're acting out we know is wrong, and we're not pleased, but we'll go ahead and act it out anyway. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about really acting out the way you are. And I believe that it's good. In the metaphysical Christian church, we believe that all people are good. We believe that every single soul is going to be saved. We believe that every soul will be saved when they come to the awareness of their own ignorance and their own fears and doubts and their own wrong image they may have created for themselves. We must act and please ourselves personally. That isn't selfish when we do it on this high level. And the third capsule is, our actions must be acceptable to others. Now sometimes if we can't accept a criminal action, we can't accept someone saying, but I'm a bank robber and I want you to be friendly with me anyway. No, I couldn't accept that. Our actions must be sociably acceptable, or we have no right trying to force people to like them. We can say, I'm a cheat and I just double deal everybody, but I still think you should be my friend. Well, a lot depends upon individual cases, but our actions must be sociably acceptable to the great society we live in. I suppose the last thing I would remind you of is a story. It's the story of a very lonely man who felt so rejected by life and people that he decided one day that he would take himself on this cold day and go across town to a bridge and throw himself off the bridge into the icy water. As he left his room for that last time, he said to himself, if I meet someone on the street whose eyes catch mine, who somehow takes notice of me as a human being, I'll turn back. But only then. So he left, and he started walking across the city to the bridge in the river. And the story ends there. But that story poses a question to every one of us. Had he met you on the street, would he have turned back? Had he met you or I on the street on that day, in his attitude, because of us, would he have turned back? That's the test. I've told you I believe what you need to know. And I've also told you the test. Now let us spend this week ahead and pass that test. Now let us pray. Heavenly Father, we give thanks for ears that hear and hearts that respond. We give thanks for thy presence within us. We give thanks for the holy knowledge of friendship. Amen.